over a year, or around about a year rather, since the discovery of tens of thousands of Indigenous artefacts at a light rail construction site in Randwick. The discovery was made around the corner of Allison Road and Doncaster Avenue. The artefacts included things like marriage stones, spearheads, knives, and even showed contact with groups from the Hunter Valley. Now, elders from the La Perouse Aboriginal community had said that there will never be a discovery to this scale in Sydney ever again. But of course, the decision was made for construction to just keep rolling on. Now, cases like this have happened all around Australia, and it raises the debate on who makes the call when discoveries like this happen and who says what they actually mean for Aboriginal heritage. Now, to discuss this, I'm joined by Greens member David Shoebridge and Scott Franks, a member of the Wanneroo Nation and CEO of Tokemoor, which is a registered Aboriginal archaeological body. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Morning, Nick. Good to be here.
Thank you. Now, look, first things first, before we jump on anything else, what actually happened to the Indigenous artefacts found at the Randwick construction site, Scott?
Look, Nick, at this stage, we believe they're under a care and control permit being held by GML, another archaeological firm in Sydney, and they've currently locked away in their offices in at Surry Hills.
So no contact with them at all?
No, not at all.
Is that unusual?
Look, it is very unusual, but the reality is I think if anyone wanted to access the objects, we have attempted to with other media representatives, and we were refused that entry by Axiona.
Now, that's got to be slightly different to how that normally would work for a discovery of such importance.
It normally would be an open-door policy. With any Aboriginal objects or relics that are retained by a firm or an office or a location, the Aboriginal people, regardless of what mob they come from, have a right of access.
Why do you think this isn't happening in this scenario?
Look, I think it's very controversial. I mean, we've continued to work along with the light rail project since that discovery, and you know, several dozen test pits have been done across the light rail project, and we've actually recovered absolutely none or detected no other artifacts. So, incredibly significant find that's just been forgotten.
Well, let's look back a little bit, because controversially it was the then Environment Minister, Greg Hunt, who allowed construction to go ahead. And he actually said to you, David, I believe in a letter, that he was, and I'll quote, not satisfied that it was a significant Aboriginal area. Look, what bodies are advising the Ministry on these calls?
Well, at the moment, the advice that the Federal Minister gets is, at best, from his own bureaucrats, And more often than not, the advice is actually just a recycled version of the advice that's gone to the state bureaucrats and the state minister. And of course, we sought some intervention from the state heritage minister as well. And the state heritage minister and the Office of Environment and Heritage just basically said it's not their problem. So rather tragically, all these decisions about Aboriginal heritage are being made, the really crucial ones, are being made by non-Aboriginal people, not the traditional owners, not registered claimants, not even land councils. It's what we've seen for, the last 2.25 centuries of non-Aboriginal people making decisions to destroy Aboriginal heritage. And Scott's kind of generous when he talks about the Aboriginal artefacts being over at Axiona. Of course, many of the Aboriginal artefacts are now either damaged or permanently buried under a massive concrete sarcophagus there, and they'll never, ever see the light of day again.
So there wasn't even a full recovery done of the find?
No.
No, and Scott was on the ground. He's probably better to speak to this.
Sorry, Scott?
Yeah, now look, Nick and David, the unfortunate fact was that the firm that was engaged put together an archaeological test pattern to do a certain area to recover a percentage of the objects. Now, and there's been a lot of comments about Tokemoor supporting this, and you know, I can clearly say that wasn't the case. The CEO of Axiona or Alltrack made some very public statements that we're still seeking advice on, that Tokemoor supported the destruction. What had actually happened was we were given an option to recover 10% of the find for scientific research, to do residue testing, dating and so on. 2 weeks after that, we were then presented with another 10% of the area had to be impacted on. I then sought a copy of the design, and at Tokemoor's own expense had another engineer's company to see if the design of the stabilising yards could be modified. Mm. Now, through that period, Axiona and Alltrack developed a process where every month they were snipping away at the archaeological zone, to the point where we were stuck with an 87% impact upon the site, which ultimately meant there was no other choice but to go and try and recover as much of the significant material as we possibly could.
Now, David, jumping back to what you said before about non-traditional owners making the call on this, obviously that there are Aboriginal groups that make advisory kind of help on this, but it sounds like you're suggesting that's a very tokenistic kind of government says, look, yeah, have your say, but we make the ultimate decision at the end.
Yeah, and if you wanted, if your listeners really wanted to understand, you know, how fundamentally, I'd suppose, racist the Australian New South Wales and really the Australian Aboriginal Heritage Protection laws are. In New South Wales, the Aboriginal Heritage Protection provisions on our statute books live in the National Parks and Wildlife Act, effectively equating Aboriginal people, their culture, their histories and, and traditions with flora and fauna. And we haven't even managed to get a standalone Aboriginal Heritage Act. And what that means is that the Minister for the Environment or the Minister for Heritage through the Office of Environment and Heritage makes all the calls. Sometimes they may choose to consult with Aboriginal groups, but they don't have to listen to anything an Aboriginal group says. They don't have to listen to anything traditional owner says. And when it comes to, in this case, something that the New South Wales planning legislation calls critical state infrastructure. So if they're putting in a rail line to a coal mine, or they're putting a toll road in, or they're putting a new transmission line in fact, all of the Aboriginal heritage protections are actually turned off. And it's just really whatever the planning minister thinks on a particular day. So even those pathetic provisions that live in the National Parks and Wildlife Act actually get turned off in these cases. It's, you know, it's probably about as offensive as you can get when you think about we're dealing with the longest continuous cultural and historical society anywhere on the planet. We just turn off all the legislative protections.
So, David, it sounds like you might be calling for an independent body to handle this rather than being folded into an environment ministry.
Well, I don't think it's a question of getting an independent body per se. I think there probably should be a hierarchy of people making these decisions, and it should start with traditional owners. So where there are traditional owners who can speak for country, who can speak for place, well, those traditional owners should be making the call. If there aren't any identifiable traditional owners, well, then if we've got registered claimants under the Federal or State Acts, those registered claimants who have been acknowledged as having a claim, having that connection with country, they should be making the decision. And then if we can't find registered claimants or traditional owners, well, then we should be looking to the land councils. It should be that hierarchy, but it shouldn't start and end with non-Aboriginal bureaucrats and ministers.
Well, Scott, I mean, a lot of people have talked about the historical relevance of the find, the archaeological relevance of it, but you know, we're not seeing a lot outside of the Aboriginal community about the cultural relevance of it and what that would mean.
Mm. Look, I think it's very difficult because, excuse me, when David assisted with the Section 9, Section 10 application, we were confronted with the local Aboriginal Lands Council, Laaparoo's Aboriginal Lands Council, going in an oppositional position to the protection. Saying that it was basically just a few spearheads and stones and bones. Now, after the minister had ticked off and said that we're going to proceed, Laaparoo's Lands Council released a media statement actually confirming that it was a ceremonial site used as payback. So it's very hard and confronting, but the problem we're dealing with is most politicians today in some of the major parties, they just simply don't have a grasp on who they're dealing with. I mean, we see this Cultural Heritage Advisory Committee that's now been appointed by OEH that's actually advising Minister Upton about Aboriginal heritage and even making recommendations for the regulations to change the Aboriginal Heritage Act, that the chair of that organisation to get into that position under Section 9 of the National Parks and Wildlife Act has to be a native title claimant. That person simply is not. They don't meet the criteria. And further, when I looked at that person's bio and their actually background, the reference they made to being a member of a Wanneroo Elders Committee, when you actually do a company search, that committee's a toy shop in the Hunter Valley where he makes toy soldiers in his backyard. So we have an individual who's sitting there giving an innocent minister advice who simply is not qualified to give that advice. We then have lands councils jockeying for a position to manage heritage because of the cash cow syndrome. All of these permits and applications, and for an Aboriginal stakeholder group like a lands council or even a registered Aboriginal party, which Tokemoel sometimes operates in that realm, you can be expected to pay $600 to $1,280 a day to put boots on the ground. So the destruction of Aboriginal heritage is it's appalling because it's based on a numerical system of support to pay Aboriginal people. And in most cases, most of these people wouldn't know a stone axe if you hit them in the side of the head with it.
Just to be clear, Scott, you're saying that a role that by law has to be held by an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander person isn't?
At the front.
Well, no, the person is Aboriginal, but under Sex Schedule 9 for the appointment, they have to be a... And they've actually, I believe what they've done, and I'm speculating, when they've applied for the position to be appointed, they've asserted they're a registered native title claimant, and they're simply not.
That's actually incredible. Gentlemen, I'm sorry, we will have to leave it there. David, thank you very much. Scott, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. And David, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for that. That was Scott Franks from Togemaw and MP David Shoebridge from the Greens discussing, well, what actually sounds like the more you unpack it, the more controversial it gets, the Aboriginal artefact find at Randwick nearly a full year ago.